episode 10 of Film Study with Ken McCusick. We're looking this time at the offensive play, the little bit that there was in the Steelers' home game, 26-9, loss to the Steelers. Ken McCusick, how you doing?
Life is good, Josh. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm not bad. I love this weather. Like fall, this is like the perfect weather right now. I can just go hang outside, fire pit if it gets too cold, but just the fact that I don't need to sweat when I'm outside means I'm very happy with this weather.
Yeah, me too. No sweat, no bugs. Those are my big requirements for being outside.
Yes. So I love fall. Let's hope that it lasts more than like a week. It felt like last year we had this weather for about 2 days, and then I was in big sweatshirts and jackets, and I'm hoping this lasts a little longer this year.
Alrighty.
All right, we got to do it. We got to talk about the Ravens' offense from week four. There wasn't much of it. And the Steelers put on a lot of pressure. So where do you want to start? Where should we start with looking at this play?
Well, we can start a little bit about with the Steelers' pressure scheme, because that dictated a lot of what the Ravens did. And maybe talk about Joe Flacco first up front here, is that there's something is still wrong. I don't know if I really think it's an injury or there's some inflexibility there which is affecting his ability to deliver the ball quickly. It might be something like that. But he also seems to have very skittish feet right now. And I don't blame him. The offensive line has not done much for him. And it's very difficult for him to be stepping into throws the way he would like to deliver the ball when he wants to really throw the 95-mile-an-hour fastball. But, he's very few deep throws to the outside. The couple he's had, and missing the one to Perriman looked bad. Missing the other one, the drop by Wallace, was not good. So, I mean, it's just not a lot to say. The one pass that looked like the Joe Flacco of old was the touchdown pass. I mean, that was threaded the needle between two defenders fearlessly in that regard. So that's very Joe Flacco. And got it through. Wallace made the catch, touchdown. You know, we need to see more of that. But that really was only one of two offensive plays on the day that I was really happy with.
Right. Joe is having what, so far, the career worst year for Joe. He's averaging just over 5 yards play, which is horrendous.
That's right. It's unacceptable. It's not anything the Ravens can really change. I mean, they're going to need to work through this unless they really come to a self-effacement that Joe is hurt during this year. They're going to finish this year with Joe Flacco. I don't believe they're going to make a change at quarterback. There's none that really would make sense.
Well, there's no pressure. Yeah. There's no pressure behind him for someone to come in.
That's right. It'd have to be like a Colin Kaepernick signing or something, which just seems so ridiculous to spend money on this team at this point. I can't imagine it. We can't go all the way from Everest to hell in these 2 weeks. I mean, the team is actual level is somewhere in between, and we look at what happened these last 2 weeks. We can't blame it all on London. The Ravens really laid an egg there, but I'm inclined to not give it 100% credibility factor either. The Steelers game is a bad loss at home and the worst ever to the Steelers, but the Steelers are a very talented football team. So is that a terrible loss? Well, it's a bad loss. I don't know how bad a loss it is. So.
Yeah, except we're looking at the offense that even in week one and week two, they won the game, and Joe will defend them and say they did what they had to do to win the game, which is true, but they still didn't look good.
That's right. That's right. It's the 32nd ranked offense, and with good justification. They've only really had one good offensive week, and that was week two. The other three games, they've been piss poor. So, not much to say about that. We're gonna go in and talk about some Steeler pressure. So let's start with that, just so we can get the conversation rolling on to some more positive.
Yeah,
some more
details.
Yeah. So the Steelers, only one time the entire game did they rush six, but they still presented an extremely confusing front to the Ravens, where they had a lot of two-man drops with two different players blitzing, a lot of stunts. A fair amount of pre-snap movement, but basically it was a lot of they'll show you four, and those aren't the four guys who are coming. And They had 12 times in this game where they only rushed three. So that's almost 25% of the dropbacks right there. And honestly, that's a big gift to this offensive line, I'd say, except that Flacco, with eight men in coverage, is still going to have difficulty delivering a pass and finding an open receiver. So it was a difficult day. I think the Steelers had an excellent game plan for this, and unfortunately I think it's something the rest of the league is probably going to pick up on in terms of showing the Ravens multiple pressure looks to really unwind Flacco the way he's playing right now.
Right, right. So, and I guess you would think with the three rushing, with 25% of the time only rushing three men, does that open up the, generally, it didn't much on Sunday, but does that generally open up the pocket more for a run game?
Well, it could. You, if you have slow developing runs, which can come two ways, you can get a slow developing run on a draw, and with the speed the Ravens have, you can get a number of extra defenders out of the play. So you can create draw action that's useful there, but you can also create opportunities for a running quarterback. So if Flacco was a guy with real legs at this point in his career, which he's not, then he could take off and get some 10 and 12 yard chunks. If I don't know if you saw the
you're speaking out to those Kaepernick fans again that wanted Kaepernick in Baltimore.
Yeah, well, that's the area where Kaepernick would really help you, Kaepernick. Probably would throw plenty of interceptions given this offense, and he wouldn't necessarily be the right guy. But, you know, honestly speaking, you could make the point he's a better guy for this offensive line than Flacco, because Flacco really needs a pocket to excel in, and Kaepernick does not. But Kaepernick, on the other hand, probably is not the same level of pocket passer that Flacco is. So, you know, you get problems on that end if you take him.
Right. All right. So Weston Allen combined for 0 yards.
Yeah, that's right. Horrible day. 6 carries, 0 yards. You know, West had a fumble that was part of the problem with that. Didn't get recovered by the Steelers, but a loose ball on the field. You know, it's really been ugly, and those guys aren't helping themselves in other ways. Allen in particular has been a big liability as a pass blocker, which is something I'm having a lot of trouble with. But when I'm allocating these sacks out, he got another half sack in this game. And you just can't have a half sack per game allowed by your running backs. It's too much. So I don't know what they do, but I'll say this, that all of the posturing about fumbles, there isn't really another answer other than Collins at this point. I know he's put the ball on the ground twice in the last 18 runs, but in fact, it's less than that. But the... there isn't another option for other than Collins here. So that's why we're hearing some things this week that are like, we think we can teach him how to carry the ball differently so he'll fumble less.
All right. And that's good, because that's what I want to ask you about with Collins. He's quickly became the favorite. He had that burst in the 23-yard run that seemed like, okay, things were going to be okay for the Ravens. It started out early, got us excited. He seemed to be doing okay with the kick returns.
He hasn't returned very many of them, but yeah, he's doing okay.
But then he fumbled on Sunday. And it seems like with John Harbaugh, if you fumble the ball, you go into that doghouse. And we saw him pulled off the field immediately after that fumble, and it took a while to get him back out there.
It did, and if you looked at where he was standing, it was one of these odd situations where whoever was off the field, Wester Allen, was standing right next to the offensive coordinator, but Collins was like two rows deep. So they told him, you know, go think about this for a moment. And, you know, he came back, and after halftime, he got some more carries and got the 50-yard run that really got the Ravens' comeback kind of fueled in that third quarter. But you're right. I mean, he has no tolerance for it, and he probably shouldn't. But, you know, given the options they've got a guy who can't pass block and isn't a runner in Allen. They've got a guy who hasn't been able to be consistent at all as a runner in West, who had -7 yards, you know, running the ball on Sunday. And they've got Collins, who gives him a spark, has averaged 9 yards a carry the last two games, and put the ball on the ground twice, unfortunately.
Right, right. I am not the fan of the doghouse because of that whole thing of, well, everyone makes mistakes, but the question is, can you recover from that mistake? How do you bounce back? And I think that I hate the John Harbaugh doghouse because I really feel like if West or Allen was doing anything on Sunday, Collins would have not been in the game the rest of the game.
Yeah, you're right. If they started running for 4 or 5 yards a clip, it probably wouldn't have been. One of the things about Harbaugh, I believe, is that he probably takes it very seriously when a player does not respond well to a teaching moment. And I think a lot of coaches feel that way. If I go to you and I go, Josh, you're fumbling the football here, and I want you to do something differently. I want you to hold the ball high and tight. Watch me how I hold the football. And you're going, yeah, yeah, and looking away, not looking at me. I'm going to say, look, Josh, take a quarter. Get it figured out. But I want you to go work with the running backs coach, and I want you to figure out how to hold the ball. I mean, I don't have any problem with that. If John Harbaugh did not get a good reaction from Collins in that respect, I understand him sitting him for longer.
Okay. I can see that, except I kind of feel like that's the type of thing you work on during the week. And I also, in my eyes on TV, that didn't look like a horrible fumble because he got knocked around. It was kind of stripped from the back.
Yeah, you know, I got to look at that one again. The first one was very bad. It was one of these twisting for an extra yard fumbles. And Harbaugh called him out for it. And this one, I think actually he was turned around, but it might have been by his own twist. And the ball might have come apart from his body slightly with the action, which is usually a case,
okay,
by the way.
I see what you're saying.
Big fumblers tend to be guys who fight for the extra yard. In so doing, you're putting the ball at risk rather than just going down when you should and taking a chance. But spinners in particular have a big problem with ball security.
Right. So the Ravens started out with where we thought they were going to do something. They ended up having to punt the ball after that long run. And then the Steelers just held on to the ball for 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, that was really, in a lot of ways, that was the game right there in a nutshell. Steelers only got 3 points out of it. The defense did eventually get them stopped. But it really showed a lot of their weaknesses to the power running game, and they were consistently running outside. I think the Ravens got them into a big second and 20 situation or a first and 20 situation. Then they ripped off a 30-yard run or whatever it was to get the first down. And that, in a lot of ways, was a microcosm of the game as a whole.
Right. After the game, Sunday evening, Monday, a lot of the Raven players went to Twitter, and they were making comments about the fans because of how the game started with the PA announcer said, we're going to take a moment for prayer for unity. Mm-hmm. The players kneeled then, and the crowds all booed at them. And then the players then stood for the national anthem. But a lot of players went to Twitter about those boos and that those boos from their own fans bothered them. Do you think that affects the way they come out and start the game?
I sure as hell hope not, because first of all, I understand the lack of desire not to have what you're going to do on the sidelines dominate the pregame conversation, but just heads upping the fans, telling them 5 minutes ahead of time while the players in those Simmons tunnel is that the Ravens have agreed that as a team they will take a brief prayer while kneeling for equality before the game, right, and then we'll stand for the anthem. If they had just laid out the script for us, you know, like a church program, damn it. And you know,
yeah, I guess so you're thinking because Bruce Cunningham didn't say and then they'll stand. See, I'm the guy who always says that I don't go to football games because football fans are stupid. And watching that on TV, I said, "See, here's the problem. Football fans are stupid. They think that they're kneeling for the anthem."
Right.
So I don't know. I
we have a double standard here too, because you know the kneeling during the anthem or yelling "Oh," which is a bigger question. Now I've yelled "Oh" my whole life, so I'm not saying I'm any different than anyone else, but I do it in every foreign stadium and everywhere else. But I just look at the two things.
Yeah, and I get that. I understand that. Except here's the difference: the protest tends to take away and be against something, where the O is more of a celebration and of
something else. Okay.
So it's more of a positive negative mix. Is the way I
see
it. But hey, but everyone sees this issue differently. I'm not sure if I told you I went out to eat Sunday evening, and there was a couple sitting next to me arguing about the whole NFL protest thing, And the lady's point was that she was trying to make to the person she was sitting with was, I don't see what the big deal is. It's just like in October when they wear pink to protest breast cancer.
Okay.
Exactly. I'm like, okay, you win. I did not know that was a protest. You know what?
Yeah, you don't engage with that person, obviously.
Right. Yeah, we're not going to get into a political discussion. No, everyone else is doing that. I have made a constant choice to not go down that route. Because even if I tried to make a joke about it, everyone gets all upset. So we'll just leave it. Let's talk more about the play on the field. Because Joe Flacco, his favorite receivers are always the tight ends. And that frustrates Raven fans because we know what he can do with the deep ball. We remember the Torrey Smith years. Watson made a nice catch. But besides that, was there much going on?
I mean, the tight end play in general has not been what the Ravens could have hoped. First of all, Max Williams was hurt this week, and he'd done a little bit for the Ravens in terms of being a blocking force, and he'd been in the backfield, used as a fullback on some plays. Obviously, they've used Ricard, some at tight end, but he's not a receiving threat at all. Williams had a little bit of after-the-catch value. Watson has been their best receiver at tight end, but he hasn't been able to consistently find holes in the zone. He made the big pick play at Cincinnati in week one. He had 5 catches in week two. But other than that, he really hasn't done a whole lot, and he hasn't been consistent enough. And then Boyle has had, frankly, just a very bad blocking year so far and just a few catches. So he was the guy I think that they hoped would come back and be the most significant centerpiece at tight end. And he's just been kind of honestly a disappointment so far this year. So that's how I kind of see the Ravens tight end situation.
I mean, yeah, it's the Ravens offensive situation. It's a disappointment.
Yeah.
What about Breshad Perriman? We've waited years to see a early draft pick by the Ravens, offensive wide receiver guy. We haven't had that in a while. He has shown not much. Is he a bust?
I mean, look, I'm not even sure there's a lot of value in deciding whether you call him a bust or not. He's certainly getting close to that if he's not. This is his third year here. He's, you know, only had, 30-some catches now as a Raven, something like that. He's had, you know, a number of plays that you can count on one hand anyway that have been really special in terms of either making a good catch or making a great play with the ball after the catch. I can remember the Miami game last year. He's done absolutely nothing this year, so that's been disappointing. I'd like to maybe take a look at route by route of what's happening while Flacco is not throwing him the ball. That would be an interesting study to do, but I just don't have the time to do it right now, unfortunately. But with the top view, you get a good angle of what's happening with the wide receiver, and I'd like to see how other teams are approaching the coverage of him, and then where Joe Flacco is in terms of his reads and why he's not getting the ball, because it doesn't seem right that what's happened so far.
Yeah, that's a good homework assignment I'd like to see. We talked about Antonio Brown on the past episode getting frustrated because he felt like he was always open and Ben wasn't throwing it to him. As far as I can see on the TV broadcast, there's never anyone open for Joe to throw to.
that often does end up being the way, but they show you that when there's a coverage sack. They tend to show you the top view and show you how few options there were, and that that's why he got sacked here. With regard to Brown, I mean, last game, it was the Ravens shut him down. I mean, Ben threw to him 9 times. That's not nothing.
Right.
And he just made only 4 catches, and one of them happened to pop in the air right into Weddle's hands. So, it was a very bad effort from Brown, and that Gatorade bucket owes him a kick in the rear, too.
Yep. Let's get to the linemen. I guess thanks to some garbage time at the end, that helped their numbers a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good point, Josh. I mean, you know, you look at a drive like the last one in that fourth quarter when the Steelers were up already 26-9, and I look at my score sheet here, and I just see a lot of ones in particular on that drive. Stanley gave up 2 pressures on the drive, and there were 2 missed blocks, but otherwise everybody scored perfect for that drive. And a drive like that obviously didn't mean anything. So if you weighted it towards importance, you know, the earlier blocks in the game mattered more, and the Ravens did not do as well with them. But their overall scoring came out okay, not great as a whole in this game, but not as badly as you might have thought based on how badly the offense played, that's for sure.
Right.
So do we want to start with Ronnie Stanley here?
Yeah, let's start with Stanley because he didn't look that great, but you gave him a B.
I did. I gave him a B. So, you know, when I looked at the film, he was giving up a lot of ground in the pocket. But it's kind of like reminiscent of Ricky Wagner last year, that he was giving up ground towards the back pylon of the pocket, and there's still a fair amount of space, A, and B, it's not within the 120-degree arc where Joe was centered on the receiver most of the time. So even though he was giving up some ground and letting some guys get fairly close to Joe, it wasn't real pressure. And so I had him for 3 missed blocks, 3 pressures, an 82. I gave him some bonus points on top of that, although I didn't give him as many as I would have normally because I thought he was giving up too much ground. And that worked out to be an 85 for a B at tackle.
Okay. Well, that's a good bounce back game after Jacksonville.
Yeah, sure is. I mean, the Jacksonville game, he had the worst game he had since Pittsburgh last year in the first time. So that was right around.
That was like week nine, right? That was late in the season.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to James Hurst.
Okay, so Hurst has been on a downward descent from C to D plus to F the first 3 weeks, and ending with a really poor game against Jacksonville. But he bounced back against Pittsburgh as well. 1 pressure, 2 penetrations. Penetrations are allowing a run to go for a loss because you allow somebody in the backfield. 1 pressure is really excellent given that he had Cam Hayward as an opponent for much of the game. So Hayward was a wrecking crew in this game. He was in the backfield the whole time. Some of that came on the other side against Skura or against Illuminor, or on stunts. But Hurst actually was pretty clean on this, and it gave him a .77 raw score with an adjustment, ended up being a B at guard for Hurst. So good bounce back game, easily his best game of the season. We'd love him to perform at this level. It won't happen, but if he could get back to that C average level, we'd love it.
Right. Yeah. How about Jensen? Jensen last week, you said he had the best game of his career. Was he able to keep it up with a better opponent?
No, he didn't have a terrible game by any stretch, and that's an extremely talented interior line, so he gets a pretty significant subjective adjustment for what he did, but he allowed 4 separate pressure events he was party to. 2 pressures, another half pressure, and a half a sack as well. So at center, giving up 4 pass rush events in one game is usually pretty deadly. And he scored .75, and with an adjustment, he gets into the C range with that. So honestly, not what we would hope for from Jensen. I think he's, you know, if I had to say where do I want Jensen to be, it would be on the, at least on the B minus range now going forward. I mean, I have more confidence in the guy, and frankly, I'm pinning a lot of hopes for the Ravens on the rest of the season on the fact that he can really solidify the interior of the line and the line as a whole by being a decent leader as well on his play.
All right. I guess as we continue down the line, Illuminor also got some playing time this week. Cam and Skura kind of shared time.
Yeah, so Skura got the start, and Skura played 50 of the 66 snaps. So he played 50. Illuminor played 16. Skura was bad, but he was just on the verge of a D basically at the position. But then Illuminor scored off the charts low, only a .27. And when you combine the two of them, you have an F at that position where we had a C-plus last week in London, even in the big loss. So it was a disappointing step back for both of them, frankly. But Skura gave up 1 penetration, 2.5 pressures. He gave up 2/3 of a sack. That's just an awful lot of pass rush events to give up on the inside. He did have very difficult opponents. So he got Hayward and Tuitt a lot, and those guys are both very good. but still a D performance by him, and he earned it. Illuminor, in only 16 snaps, he gave up a third of a penetration, one pressure, and a half a sack, which is a ton for that little bit of playing time. Only 4.3 points out of 16, so that's a .27. Anyway, not what we want, and I don't think there's a whole lot of talk necessary to do with it. He doesn't even earn a subjective adjustment when you have fewer than 20 snaps. But when I add him into Skura's play, the platoon is not doing that well.
That's frustrating.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that Harbaugh is still trying to platoon the two, but obviously he may be preparing for the possibility of another injury, and that injury could really happen anywhere. It could happen at tackle, or it could happen at guard, or even center, because if that were to happen, Illuminor is going to be forced into action either by Skura moving to center, or by an injury at left guard where Hurst would go down, or by an injury at tackle, which moves Hurst out to tackle and moves Illuminor to left guard. So somehow any injury will move Illuminor as the next guy up into a starting role, and I think he wants to see some live fire snaps from him out of it. I think the strategy is not bad. I just, you know, it's a difficult one to implement successfully.
Gotcha. Yeah, and the way this season's going, everyone should be prepared for an injury.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah. Yes.
I mean, I don't think there's much else to say except injuries are happening nonstop with this team. Let's close it out with Howard. He seemed to be getting beat, and guys were getting past him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's still so slow. I mean, he's the slowest offensive lineman that I've seen the Ravens have in a long time. He really reminds me of that last year from Willie Anderson when he played in 2008 with the Ravens. He had been getting by with that because he was getting his hands on people and getting them past the pocket. He had one particular rush in this game that I didn't end up charging him for. The slot corner rushed Hilton. He eventually got a sack, but Howard barely got his hand on him, and he kind of showed his strength to be able to push him past the pocket. And then as I timed it out, it was about 3.5 seconds before Flacco took the sack. So that one really goes to Flacco, but it would have been nice if Howard was a little quicker and could have got a little better push on Hilton that might have delayed him for another second or more. And it's just, you know, that kind of slowness is hurting, and the faster pass rushers like Dupree is also took big advantage of him. He had a holding penalty. He did allow a sack in the game, or half a sack, I should say. No, full sack between two events. So bad in general. One and a third penetration, so fractional charges for two different events on penetrations that were bad. D minus for the game. You know, he's not going anywhere. The Ravens have him. They signed him for 3 years. They might cut him after a year, but he has to be part of the answer this year somehow.
All right. All right, so two B's, two D's, and a C. Can we average that out to an average offensive line, or is it no? The fact that there's two D's, you gotta say that's the down.
Well, one part of the problem is that the right guard position as a whole is really an F when you add in Illuminor. It's not
okay.
Really a D.
All right, I wasn't counting Illuminor with only the 16, but okay, we can bring him in.
Right, and then it's really a D minus. I mean, he's just on the border. He passed by 1 point. That's how close it was to a failure for Howard. So. It's no, this performance is not acceptable. They can't put this on the board every week. And especially, I think they got some bonus point scoring from the garbage time that they would not normally get in against another team. So since they can't rely on that, no, they just need to play better than they did this week.
I see. All right. Well, this is normally where we go to the mailbag. And we want you to take your questions and go on Twitter at Film Study Ravens. This week we kind of
Study Mailbag.
What did I say? Film Study Ravens. Yeah, Film Study Ravens is your Twitter name. So yeah, hashtag Film Study Mailbag to send in your questions. We kind of jumped up and recorded a little early today, so we didn't get too many in. So the first one is going to be from this really smart guy at Josh Soroka. which says the Ravens are really struggling to get back to play without Marshall Yanda. Isn't Nick Mangold still out there? Is he worth a phone call?
Normally if the Ravens were contenders at this point, if they were 3-1, if they just beaten the Steelers, or even if they just beaten the Jaguars and lost to the Steelers this same way, I'd say, sure, give Mangold a try. It's worth trying to invest in this team. But right now, with all the injuries, everything that's wrong, the uncertainty over Flacco, the inability of the defense to do much when they don't have a lead, you know, and then figuring out how this offense is ever going to get the defense to lead, I can't see spending more money, because you're spending it from future cap dollars on this year's team. I can't see it.
But the only argument against that would be, if you were 3-1, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about there being a big problem and we got to sign someone. You would think. I mean, if they were winning. We got another Twitter question from Marty Mornaway, who says, we had a bad experience traveling to London. Now we got to travel to Oakland. What can I do to beat the Raiders? And I just signed, I'm blanking on the guy. We just signed a former Raider to help us with this game plan, Gabe Holmes, a tight end. Do you think he'll actually get any playing time, or is he, the Ravens are desperate, this guy's out there?
Interesting. I first of all, I wasn't even aware of the transaction today, but it's interesting to hear.
It's a practice squad signing. It's
practice squad.
It's practice squad for now.
Okay. Then he probably will not be elevated before the game. They may just be trying to figure out what are the Raiders do on special teams that they can take advantage of. So if they're doing some of that stuff, then that makes a little sense to me. The best chance for the Ravens to win this game is to take advantage of E.J. Manuel. But the Raiders, according to PFF, have the highest pass blocking efficiency of any team. So they don't make a lot of mistakes there. They're going to really have to force Manuel to do some stupid things with extra people in coverage. So I would say this is a game where we're probably going to frustrate the hell out of Ravens fans by having a lot of four-man pass rush and maybe some three as well, while they wait for Manuel to make mistakes in the pocket. They had a similar quarterback experience against Tyrod Taylor at the first game of last year, and they basically controlled the rush lanes. They used what I call a Star Wars trash compactor pocket, where they slowly get it crushed in around him. Say again?
Yeah, they slowly close in and make a pocket, close that pocket.
Yeah, slowly close that pocket and make a running quarterback extra nervous under those circumstances. And it worked against Tyrod last year, so I'd hope that maybe it might work against Manuel as well.
Are you excited that we're facing Manuel well, or would you rather have seen Derek Carr?
I'd much rather see Manuel. I always go for the worst quarterback, and it's the Ravens' big chance to win is that Manuel makes a mistake early, or somebody makes a mistake, they get the lead, and all of a sudden he starts to get nervous and starts to make many mistakes. So that's their big chance to win. It still might not work out. There still should be a dog in Oakland. I think there might be 4 points the first I saw, though a lot of places didn't have the line even on yet. But anyway, he's their big chance to win.
Yeah, I saw the same line, Ravens +4 going to Oakland, is what I saw this morning when I was making my picks.
So that's probably puts him right around about a 38% chance to win the game. So that's not it's not what the Ravens need these next 4 weeks. They need to really figure out how to beat up on some cornerbacks, because Mitch Trubisky will be coming to Baltimore for his second start on October 15th. So that's another option or another opportunity against the young quarterback.
Right, time to take advantage of these young guys.
Okay. I got another question here.
Okay.
Here from Be More Finest.
All right.
He said, is there any right tackle we can trade for or sign? Can Howard move to right guard with Skira moving to left guard? Not a bad idea, by the way, to move Howard inside, giving his speed, but I think there's just absolutely no right tackle worth signing on the market right now. So great idea, in the right place. Before the season, I really thought Howard belonged on the inside, but I'm not sure that there's anything that will make that happen. I guess it's still possible they could move Hurst back to the outside. He's struggled at guard, but he's also struggled at tackle, as we know, in his career. So I'm not sure that's a reasonable alternative. And Be More Finest seems to really want to move the chess pieces around. He also asked, can Bowanko take center and move Jensen to left guard? And I would say, after the game we saw out of Jensen in Jacksonville and the play the last 3 weeks in total, I think the last thing we want to do is move Ryan Jensen anywhere from center. He's one of the strengths on the line, and want to make sure he stays there.
All right. One more question on here, and I don't think you'll have the answer, from D. Hour Anderson,
who says... Zero Hour Anderson.
No, this is D. Hour. Have we been saying his name wrong? It is, or this is a different guy. The letter D. Hour Anderson.
We have been saying it wrong.
We've been saying it wrong.
See it now.
All right.
Yes. That's
so
terrible.
He wants to know if you have any inside information on what Macklin said to Marty Mornaway on the sideline when he threw his helmet.
Much appreciate the question, but no, I don't, and I'm not privy to such things in general. So I'd be interested to know. It may have been heat of the moment stuff, but you know, honestly, a lot of these things, when players get upset on the sideline, it's not always obvious what it's about. And I try and read that body language and see where people are standing, like with Collins going to the back of the melee of players who might go in on offense. But you know, you just can't always figure it out when a wide receiver in particular is upset.
Right. Right, they get up. If anything, wide receivers are the prima donnas on the field, so you don't know what they're doing. So, all right, Ken. Well, this was great again, and I look forward to doing it next week because I hope the Ravens can pull out another win, a third win, after some frustrating losses. But who knows? They got to travel out west to Oakland. So until then, I want people to go on over to Russell Street Report and get really in depth with your write-ins. And then, how can they follow you on Twitter as well?
Okay, so on Twitter, it's at Film Study Ravens. We have a great discussion. A lot of analysts during the day and at night as well. People are chirping in. If you toss it to that at sign, a lot of people will see it who are good football fans, and I appreciate the comment. Whenever I'm around, my tweet deck is always up, and I'm trying to answer. So I appreciate that, Josh. And where can they see 336? Where can they hear that, and where can they enjoy it?
My show is Section 336. It's available at section336.com. It's a once-a-week podcast about Baltimore sports. This week we put to death the 2016 Orioles. And started, actually, I don't even think we looked much at the offseason. We looked more at some things that we enjoyed from this past year and some things that were just really frustrated, and that we're all glad to see Ubaldo Jimenez finally be gone.
Nice. He may have pitched his last game as an Oriole. That's for
sure. He better have pitched his last game as an Oriole. I don't know what to do if they re-sign him.
You know, the old famous quote from John McKay was, asked about the 76 Buccaneers who went 0-14, what do you think about your team's execution? And he pondered it for a moment. He said, I'd be for it.
Yeah. That's. There's a few of those guys that I am not have no problem saying goodbye to. And a few more guys I wish we could say goodbye to. So, all right, Ken. Well, we will speak on Monday.
Life's good, Josh. Talk to you then. Hang tough for a second.